This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tea Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's Tea Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEA today or visit menstclinic.com. That's menstclinic.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What's the latest draft intel we have?
Okay, so over at ESPN, and we're getting closer and closer to the NFL draft. I still think, we talked to Nick Harris yesterday, he thinks right now that where this is heading is that we're going to get Tet McMillan as the Cowboys pick at number 12. That's depending on if he's there or not. But ESPN has collected all the different draft intel and had all their beat writers weigh in on where things stand currently with each team. Mm-hmm. So the Dallas Cowboys, who currently have picks number 12, 44, 76, and then a slew of day three picks. So the question posed to Todd Archer was, what is the most telling thing team owner Jerry Jones has said about the Cowboys' draft plans? And Todd says, when it comes to the draft, Jones has kept all options open. He believes the depth in this class matches up with the Cowboys' needs. He doesn't believe they need to force a pick at a particular spot. So at least when it comes to the first round, the Cowboys can take the best player available. That would be a cornerback, wide receiver, offensive lineman, defensive lineman, or even running back. Quote, there's exceptions to every plan, and the draft brings that concept out really well, he said. That's from Todd. So then Jordan Reed, their draft analyst, it says, what are we hearing about the Cowboys draft? And Jordan says, the Cowboys have been open about needing an explosive receiver opposite CeeDee Lamb, with Matthew Golden being heavily linked to them at the number 12 pick. Matthew Golden from the University of Texas actually visited with the Cowboys yesterday. He posted a picture on his Instagram of him hanging out with Jerry Jones. But it says running back is also a need for Dallas. While there has been talk about the Cowboys taking Omarion Hampton from North Carolina at number 12, it seems more likely they'll use their second round pick on a runner. The team has expressed interest in Ohio State running backs Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins in that spot. So I would be, first off, I'm very surprised Jordan Reed completely skipped over mentioning Tetero McMillan, because I think they've been linked to him more than they have Matthew Golden. But I mean, I guess they had Jordan do the analyze instead of Todd, who's actually here on the ground with boots on the ground. I think that Tet McMillan makes the most sense to me right now, the receiver from Arizona.
So that would be, like, if you had anyone you could take, you know, obviously within reason, like, you know, Travis Hunter doesn't fall.
Yeah. I think if they're given who I anticipate will probably be there.
So let's say Tet, Will Campbell, Membu.
Membu and Campbell would be sleepers. So Membu.
Who's the edge from?
Mykel Williams from Georgia?
No, the other one.
Which, Mike Green from Marshall? Jalen Walker from Georgia. So Jalen Walker's kind of a tweener. I don't know how they'd view him.
Okay.
I don't know if they'd be like, we need somebody. Like, I think Mykel Williams from Georgia could be a sleeper that they might look at, because they've shown a lot of interest in him during the process. Matthew Golden's a good player. Matthew Golden is a speedster. He's really impressive. He reminds me of Henry Ruggs, in, not like off the field, but on the field. And so, like, I wouldn't mind having him opposite CeeDee Lamb. It's just that 12 might be a little rich for most people.
Okay.
McMillan was the number one receiver for forever. He was a top five pick, was considered pretty consistently, and it feels like people have gotten fatigue with him. and I've just grown tired. But, man, to me, if you tell me they get Tet McMillan in the first and Travion Henderson in the second, the Ohio State running back, I'm happy. There's very little you could do over the next few days that would upset me. I'd be pretty happy with that overall. Now,
as the fan tech says, they're going to take a linebacker with drop foot in the second.
They've already got one, don't they? It's funny. When you look at the question of trading back, though, you know how we brought up that mm-hmm. question? Jason Light, who is the Buccaneers GM, he had said yesterday that he thinks fewer teams are actually going to try to trade up in the draft. This is what he had said on Thursday during a pre-draft press conference with reporters. He said, I do think this year is going to be, and he said, I could be wrong, you're going to see maybe a little less people wanting to move up and offering enough to make it worth your while, just because the draft is pretty leveled out at a certain point. You might be able to get the same level of play in the second round as you can in the fourth round at certain positions, so I think you'll maybe see a little bit less of that. And we've talked about, there may be for some teams like only 10 first round picks this year, like that they go, that's a first round graded player. And once you get past that group, you're looking at the next 50 players kind of all being similarly graded to you. And so some teams are just like, what do I want to trade up for? Why would I want to go up? I can pick that same kind of player and not give anything up. And so that's why Dallas is right there on the edge, where if McMillan slides to them, if a first round pick slides to them, I think no matter what the position, if it's a first round player, they're taking whoever that is, because they're going, the value, this is the rarest value opportunity we're going to get in this draft is going to be right here. And that's why I think it could be McMillan, because I think McMillan is a genuine first-round player.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, and then, you know, the best player available versus need versus, I guess, the best player available at a position of value. Like, is that kind of the three kind of different philosophies teams have? Need, best player available, or best player available at?
A position of need.
A position of value or a position of need. However
you blend the two of the Cowboys generally take a blend approach. So the Cowboys will go, they don't just strictly go best player. If the best player available is a quarterback, they're not taking him.
Right, unless it's like a certain draft.
But I mean, like this year they wouldn't, for instance. A couple years back when they took Taco Charlton, the only first-round graded player they had left on their board was Dalvin Cook, and they didn't take him because they had Zeke. They had taken Zeke the year before. So they go, okay, well, that's the highest graded player we have, but we're not taking him here. And so they look generally for, all right, what's our position of need or can sort of be need? For instance, is tight end a need? No. Would they reach a point where maybe Tyler Warren would be so much better than what else is up there that they go, it's not necessarily a need, but we're not so secure in it that we can pass on the value here of how good he is? And so they kind of will blend the two concepts.
I'll be honest, like, could you not see a situation where you have both Warren and Ferg out there and, like, you have a Gronk Aaron Hernandez thing?
I mean, God, I hope you wouldn't have that.
I mean, on the field.
Yeah, on the field. Yeah, sorry. We're invoking Henry Ruggs and Aaron
that's
Hernandez.
That's a real advantage.
Yeah. No, it is.
If you had Gronk.
They need a second dynamic pass catcher. If that's Tyler Warren, that's Tyler
Warren. If Tyler Warren's there, I would like to see him. I mean, I have no problem
taking
him.
I think they'd probably have enough guys graded close to him that they could go somewhere else. But yeah, if they were to trade down, for instance, and then they get white and Tyler Warren sitting there at 16, they may go there. That's clearly the best player left.
That's value. That's high value.
Then go, all right, we got to take it. And so I think we could, I think we could absolutely see that. 806, is Ollie Gordon not in the draft or is he Cheeks? No, he's not Cheeks. He's actually a really strong three down running back. I think if the Cowboys haven't addressed running back by the third round, maybe I could see him potentially being in play there for them.
Is he Cheeks?
That's a good question.
I like it. That's a good question. Now you right now expect them to stay.
My guess is they stay, and my best guess at this moment is they take Tetero McMillan, which if they do that, you should be dancing in the streets, Cowboys fans. That guy is a monster. He is so good, and to me that's a multiple time Pro Bowler you're getting.
Look, I like him. My first choice would be I would take if he's available, Will Campbell.
Because you want to solidify the trenches.
Yeah. If you want to move him to guard, move him to guard.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
8 o'clock hour here on 105.3 The Fan. I'm RJ Choppy. He is Bobby Belt.
Got you down.
Peyton and Aiden. alongside your hump day edition to Sean and RJ.
Hump day.
On the fan here, we got Adam Schefter coming up at 9 o'clock, Brett Boone at 9:20. Big night tonight. Got Luka in town taking on the Mavs. And we got the Rangers coming up 12:30 pregame right here on the fan. KNC's got a short show today.
Oh, you're kidding.
Try to avoid the sweep.
A short show. That's so awesome for them. But we've got the best guest of the day. Some have referred to him as the next Kyle Yeomans. It's Dane Brugler from The Athletic here to talk about the Beast, his annual draft guide. Dane, how are you, sir?
I've been called worse. Hey, guys. Good morning. How are you guys?
Doing great. Excited that the Beast is here. Dude, first off, before we get into the actual content or some of these draft questions, it is so sleek and stylized looking this year. You got like all the different like graphics and such a clean new look and all the different things with it. You've still got the regular printed version I see available, but it looks like you guys have tricked it up this year.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to still honor the people who like to print it out and have a physical copy and, you know, go with the straight PDF. But, you know, it's 2025. Let's upgrade this thing. And yeah, it's the navigation's really easy. You can search. There's over 2,600 players in this thing. Mm. So you can search for anybody you want. There's testing information for all of them. 400 reports, you know, all the background information that you're just not going to get anywhere else. So, yeah, if you like the draft at all, I promise you, you will not be disappointed. Check out the Beast. Make sure you have it by your side when the Cowboys are drafting here in a few weeks, and you'll have everything you need to know about the player.
So let's start with the Cowboys first. And Dane Brugler from The Athletic joining us here on 105 Through the Fan. His annual draft guide is out now. It is a must for everybody. We're going to have it here in the studio, I know, for the next few weeks. Dane, let's start with Cowboys first before we get to some larger draft questions. The name we keep hearing a lot in mock drafts and things like that, I don't know how much it's coming from the star, but just people connecting dots. They keep mocking Omarion Hampton, the North Carolina running back at 12. I've been feeling like that's a little rich. I really, if I'm picking at 12 and I'm getting a running back, I'd probably want Genty as the only one I'd go for, but he's likely not to be there at this point. Is Hampton a guy that you think you could justify and say, I understand if the Cowboys were to go with him at 12, I understand why they would make that pick?
It would. I fall along with kind of where you're thinking. It feels rich. I mean, Omarion Hampton is a really good player. It's maybe the best compliment you can give is, yeah, okay, last year in 2023 with Drake May, ran for over 1,500 yards, almost 6 yards a carry. But without Drake May this past year, everybody knew Omarion Hampton was getting the ball. They don't have a quarterback. The offense really revolved around the run game. He still rushed for over 1,600 yards, 6 yards a carry, 15 touchdowns. So, you know, regardless of what the blocking was, what the quarterback was doing, Omarion Hampton was productive, and he does it in different ways. He has the traditional build that you want from a running back, 6 foot, 220 pounds. He brings a power element, but he also has speed. He has above average burst for a guy that size. So he's a proven workhorse. And so there's a lot of things to like about him. I think Hampton will be a first round pick. But especially in a draft class like this that is so deep at the running back position, I think of the different ways they could go with that 12th pick, and I think a wide receiver, defensive lineman, maybe even a corner. To me, that makes a lot more sense in the first round, and then wait until day two and get my Caleb Johnson, get RJ Harvey. There's just so many running backs in this class that I think can help upgrade this team's running game, and they can get a better player there at 12 overall.
So your number one position at 12 would be?
Well, and I think that, and then the Cowboys don't really draft positions in the top 15, right? I think they target players more so than positions.
Right.
And really, I mean, the Cowboys deserve a ton of credit for how they've drafted the last, you know, 10, 15, 20 years when they've had a top 15 pick, top 20 pick. They haven't let it go to waste. You know, they've gone and got the CD Lambs and the Zach Martins, and, you know, they've really maximized those early picks. And so when I look at that 12th overall pick, I think you could make an argument that assuming all receivers are available at that point, whether they go with McMillan from Arizona, Matt Golden from Texas, I mean, they could really upgrade and make an upgrade in the passing game. I think that makes a lot of sense. we know they need to get better on the defensive line. And so they could upgrade there as well, whether it's, you know, could be a pass rusher like a Mike Green. It could be a defensive tackle. And we know they need corner help. So to me, the position I keep coming back to is wide receiver. This is a different wide receiver group than last year. There's no Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison Jr. If Brian Thomas, who went in the 20s last year, if he were in this draft class, he would be the first receiver drafted. So it's not necessarily a super strong receiver group, but there's still talent. There's still good players. And in my opinion, McMillan is the best of the group, flexible. He's ball winning instincts. That's what really stands out the most with him. When the ball's in the air, he's going to go get it and come down with it. You rarely see the ball hit his body, get to his body, because he's catching everything out in front with his hands. So if I have a chance to go get McMillan, if I'm the Cowboys, I think that makes a ton of sense.
You know, on McMillan, and we're talking with Dane Brugler here on 105 Through the Fan, his annual draft guide is out now over at The Athletic. You can pick up a copy with your Athletic subscription. Dane, with McMillan and the questions about his 40 time and how fast he is, does that matter as much when you look at least for me, when I watch McMillan, I see a guy who's very efficient with his movements and there's not a whole lot of wasted steps for me. So I look at it, I go like, yeah, it may be 4.55 or whatever it is, but to me, that's still a really efficient mover when he's out there working in space.
Yeah, no doubt. He's a very limber athlete, and he actually ranked third in among receivers in all of college football last year in forced missed tackles after the catch. So he's got a little bit of slipperiness to him. Massive catch radius. That's really, that's the reason you want to draft him, is the catch radius. It's really unique. It's kind of T. Higgins-esque. And, you know, T. Higgins ran, I think, a 4.59 at the combine when he was coming out. Like, he wasn't a big speed guy. And honestly, usually these guys aren't really, for me, I think of like Laquon Treadwell and N'Keal Harry. And like, we've seen a lot of those guys who were quote unquote ball winners, but maybe didn't have the separation skills. We've seen those guys not work. But I think McMillan is a little bit different because of what you're saying. He has just this flexibility and fluidity to him in his routes at the catch point, where he's just going to be those ball winning instincts really take over. So a unique playmaker who still has to get a little bit better in terms of sharpening that, some of his routes, expanding the route tree. You know, that Arizona offense kind of limited him in that area, but all the tools are there for him to be a ball winner in the NFL.
Grady Jenkins over on the Fan YouTube complimenting Dane Brugler for the Denton Ryan helmet that is on his setup behind him there on the Fan.
I was wondering if that was Denton Ryan or Mount Union.
Could it be Mount Union? Union or Denton Ryan?
It is Mount Union.
Look at that.
You didn't tell me. You're telling Grady Jenkins.
Oh, look at that.
See, you would know because you're playing Denton Ryan today, actually.
Yes. That's what that is. My kids are playing Denton Ryan today.
Dane, I got to ask you, let's talk local since we're already we're mentioning local here. What do you think of, and we'll go quarterback first, Quinn Ewers? So I have talked to various people who, you know, some people think like, man, the traits are there, and that's a guy who I'd absolutely be willing to gamble on, or, oh, that's a guy I would gladly take in the second round. And then there are other people I've heard from that are just like, that's an easy late day three pick to me. It just feels like there's a lot of variance on Ewers.
There really is. And I think you could make that case for a lot of these quarterbacks, especially in the mid rounds, you know, the Dillon Gabriels, the Will Howards, Riley Leonards, all those guys. It's a wide range of opinions. And with Ewers, you know, I think there's a lot of things that you can point to and say, okay, yeah, that's going to work at the next level. I mean, he's a natural ball handler. The ball comes out really quick, especially RPOs, really, really smooth in the RPO game. You know, he's a really good curl comeback passer. He has a good feel for areas. I think the most impressive thing about him is the poise that he plays with. And you look at some of the places he's played, 2023 Alabama, 2024 Michigan, like the true road games, that's where he's at his best. He's a very calm guy. He doesn't get affected by crowd noise. And you know, in true road games at Texas, he was 11-1 as a starter. So I think that mental toughness, that poise is something that you can really look to and say, all right, that'll translate to the next level. I want to see him stay healthy. I want to see him be able to stay on the field And, you know, I give him credit for toughing out some of those injuries last year, but it clearly affected him. And you have to be able to play through pain and still execute and still maintain your level of being a consistent starter. And so can he do that at the next level? That's kind of the question mark. When it's all said and done, I think there's a good chance he does go on day two for a team that's looking for one of these quarterbacks, second round, third round. You know, we'll see how the first round plays out. You know, obviously we think the Titans are drafting a quarterback at one. What do the Saints do at nine? Could they be a Shedeur Sanders landing spot? What about Jackson Dart? What do the Steelers do at 21? And we know the Browns and the Giants there at the top of round two need quarterbacks. So it's just a really interesting, you know, kind of domino effect of when these quarterbacks come off the board and then who's still going to be looking for a quarterback once we get to day two.
You would be surprised, or you'd be stunned by how many quarterbacks made it in the first round. What's the number that would stun you?
Well, I mean, I think the over-under is 2.5, and I'm going to take the over on that just because, you know, usually we see these guys go. You know, the Kenny Pickett year was kind of the exception to the rule. We had one quarterback in the top 73. I do think this quarterback class is more similar to that quarterback class than, say, last year where we had six in the top 12. But, you know, we could always see one of these teams, the Browns, the Giants, the Raiders, who knows, maybe trade up into the back half of round one to get one of these quarterbacks, because this is a good draft, but it's not a great draft. And so I think some of those teams in the late 20s, they'll be more than willing to trade out of there and pick up an extra third or whatever it may be to go back to pick 33 and still feel like they're getting a similar player they would have taken at 25. So there's a good chance we see some of those trades into the late first. And so I think we're going to see three quarterbacks, maybe four in the first round.
How do you bake into your mocks and big boards and stuff the philosophy that, like, if I don't have a quarterback, I just got to take one, it's worth the risk of missing,
right?
Like, how does that kind of impact how you stack your board?
Yeah, and that's where I try to keep the mocks and the boards separate. You know, the mocks are what I think teams are going to do and what I'm hearing. The board is what kind of how I see these guys and my scouting. And, you know, for me, Shedeur Sanders, I think, is 34 overall on my top 100 board. And that's where, you know, once we get to the late 20s, early 30s, like, that's where I would feel comfortable drafting Shedeur Sanders. I like Shedeur Sanders. I think he has a chance to be a starter in this league. I just wouldn't draft him top five overall. And on draft night, if the Giants end up taking him at third overall, yeah, that'd be a little rich for what I would do, but I get it. I understand. You know, there's a quarterback tax, right, where these guys get bumped up a little bit and go a little bit earlier than they should because of just the impact that they make. And so it's hard to rank quarterbacks with every other position because they're just different. The way they impact the game, the way that teams will reach on these guys, and you understand why. Because if you don't have a quarterback, you're in trouble. And so if you believe in a player, you understand why they might reach on them a little bit.
Last one for you here. We're talking with Dane Brugler here from The Athletic with his draft guide out released today. Your 12th ranked player is Tetteroa McMillan. Your 44th ranked player is Caleb Johnson. Those are the Cowboys picks, obviously. Would you say that's pretty close to a dream scenario for the Cowboys to get out of? Or who would you say 12 and 44, if the Cowboys could get that, I think they'd be sitting pretty.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, talk about what your offense looks like. You're upgrading your offense. That would do it. I like the McMillan pick in the first round. And then, yeah, in the second round, one of those running backs, whether it's Caleb Johnson from Iowa or Travion Henderson from Ohio State or Quinshon Judkins from Ohio State, I think they will have a few options there in round two, guys that can come in and help the run game, help in the pass game. And you think about what that will do for Dak, what that will do for CD, what that does for your entire offense. When you add two more threats, one in the backfield, one on the outside, I think that is an ideal scenario that helps them not only for 2024, but you think about the next 3 or 4 years where the Cowboys are kind of in this window with an established quarterback running the show.
Dane Brugler does great work for The Athletic, and he is also one of the kindest guys you'll ever meet, one of the best dudes in this business. Dane, we appreciate you, man, and everybody go get your copy of The Beast over at The Athletic.
Thank you, guys. Anytime.
Dane Brugler, again, he does fantastic stuff, and I've already been combing through The Beast. I'm excited about it. With us talking to Dane Brugler, it is a good time to remind you guys that our staple draft event with You the Tolo, Draft 101, it's coming up. It's in our fan showroom, 4131 North Central Expressway in Dallas. It's going to be our Super Bowl winning scout, Brian Broaddus, Zach Wolchuk, myself. We're going to team up with DallasCowboys.com for a night of draft talk, debate, and questions. Not only that, we're going to have dinner for you guys thanks to Whataburger, plus plenty of giveaways. Completely free, no sign-up required. Just show up on April 17th. That's April 17th. Doors open at 6:45. Can't wait to see you for Draft 101 on your home of the Cowboys, 105.3 The Fan.
A Stars lose in the worst way possible. The Rangers drop more than just a game. And surprise, surprise, there's controversy at the Masters. That's all coming up next in The Fan.
Joining us now on the D&M Leasing Hotline is ESPN NFL insider Adam Schefter. He is joining us today to talk about a cause that is very close to his heart, which is early screening of type 1 diabetes ahead of T1D Day on April 15th. We're going to get into that with him. But we're also going to talk a little bit about the NFL draft, Micah Parsons, Aaron Rodgers, Tush Push, lots of topics that we're going to get into here with Adam Schefter. Adam, thanks so much for joining us today.
Bobby, RJ, how you doing today?
We're fantastic. So first question, I just want to kind of jump off the Brian Schottenheimer hire that occurred this offseason for the Dallas Cowboys. What was your initial reaction to that? Were you surprised by the hire yourself? What do you think the league reaction was to that, and how prepared he is for this job?
Well, it was a Friday night, and I remember my phone ringing, and it happened to be Jerry Jones. And he starts going off about how Brian Schottenheimer's always been an assistant coach. He's always going to be an assistant coach, but you know, and he goes on and on about Brian Schottenheimer, the assistant coach, and he stops, he pauses, he goes, but you know what? Brian Schottenheimer's an assistant coach no more. He's now the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. And that was a big moment for Brian Schottenheimer, a big moment for the Dallas Cowboys. Might have surprised some people, but it certainly sounded like that was the way Jerry was going all along, and he just made it official that night, got the deal done. They figured out the numbers. And now Brian Schottenheimer is, in fact, as Jerry Jones said that night, the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys.
Is that normal for an owner to call you to break that news, or is that not?
It's always welcome. It's always encouraged. It's always invited. So anytime an owner wants to call to give me the news of their hiring of a head coach, I invite them all to call anytime.
You don't have to two-source that one.
Yeah, nope.
Exactly. That's nope. That one. When you look at specifically the reaction to it, because there was a lot of, like you mentioned, he's had as much preparation as possible. I'm sure you've had interactions with Brian Schottenheimer over the years, just as long as he's been in the league. It seems like there's kind of a changing sense, at least from fans here in Dallas, of like, all right, maybe we're willing to give this a shot. He seems to be saying the right things. He seems to be building a strong staff. Is there a case to be made that a guy like Schottenheimer, who's been in the Jets, been around the game for as long as he has, is probably better prepared to deal with all the things that come with Dallas than even other guys who have head coaching experience?
Well, he's been around so long, and he grew up the son of a head coach. He knows how this works, and I know it's a different day and age, and I know we're talking about media presence being as large as it's ever been, and social media playing a larger role, and certainly Marty Schottenheimer didn't have to deal with social media, but coaching football is coaching football. You know, and Brian grew up at the lap of his father. He's watched all of this for years. He's watched this longer than most head coaches have been around the sport. So I can't imagine that doesn't serve him well over time.
Talk with Adam Schefter here from ESPN, the NFL draft just days away. I'm curious, before we get to anything specific about the Cowboys on the draft, what is your overall take on the way things are setting up with the top 10? We've heard a lot about the Cam Ward potential with the Titans, or would the Titans potentially trade off? Seems like there's some growing buzz about Travis Hunter at number 2, the question of where Shedeur Sanders falls. What's kind of the story to you as we head into the draft?
Well, I think it will be where Shedeur Sanders winds up going, because it certainly feels like Cam Ward's going to go number 1. More and more recently, it has felt like Travis Hunter's definitely square and play at number 2. We'll see if the Browns go in that direction ultimately, because for a while it seemed like they might be quarterbacked, and it might be Abdul Carter. Now it's a case where basically they've got a situation where, you know, it might be now Travis Hunter 2. And then that's the question of where Shedeur winds up going. And I think when we look at it and survey the landscape, I think it's 9 is in play, the New Orleans Saints. I think Pittsburgh, 21's in play. I think we could see a team trade back up to get in there. So there are a few options. But to me, those are the places that he could go.
Are we, how long before the draft or how far out does that kind of silly season, you know, kind of end where you start to buy things that you're hearing versus this is just talking? We're trying to posture to have a player, have a market drop or rise on a player.
Well, I think it's always going on. Like, again, I mentioned the Cleveland Browns for a while. You know, there were a lot of people around the league that thought they were going quarterback. Then they thought they were going Abdul Carter. Now the feeling is it's Travis Hunter, and we'll see where they ultimately settle in. And I've said this to players over the years, you know, in the lead up to the draft, over time, players are a little bit like stocks. You see a stock go up, you see them go down. Maybe not as dramatic as the stock market these days.
Yeah, but, <right. laughs>
but you're seeing player stock rise and fall over nothing. And that's what happens. You know, like a player's hot or his value is rising, right? And then sometimes it sinks. Sometimes it keeps rising. Sometimes it's sinking all along. Like, you know, when we started this, it felt like Shador Sanders was the top-rated quarterback. So I guess you could say his stock has dropped some, but he's still going to be a one. He's still going to be a high pick. He's still going to be probably the second quarterback pick. But, you know, I would have thought all year long he would have been number one, and something changed along the way.
Adam Schefter joining us here, 105 through the Fan. We are maddened by how the Cowboys seem to operate. They just operate at their own pace. They look at the market their own way. What is the talk around the league about how the Cowboys do business with their contracts and stuff?
I think there's probably a lot more talk within Dallas about how the Cowboys operate than there is across the league. I think people across the league are kind of concerned about their own jobs. They've got enough to worry about without having to worry about how another team operates. Everybody's always paying attention to Dallas. There's always more eyeballs on the Cowboys because they're the Cowboys. But I don't know that it's like people saying, well, what are they doing? You know, if we're going to look at it last offseason, yeah, I think people felt like they should have done CD and Dak sooner, but they didn't, and they got them done. And now I guess you're leading up to Micah Parsons and, you know, Micah and Jerry were having conversations, and it certainly sounded like they were getting closer to a deal, but the agent wasn't involved. And now the agent's going to be involved, as an agent is on these deals of that magnitude. So, that deal may get done sooner than Dax or CDs, and we'll see how it all works out.
How often in your experience with dealing with things around the league, we talked about, were there a lot of hurt feelings with Todd France, for instance, on Dak's last contract negotiation? And is that why maybe that was a tough negotiation, things like that? Do things ever get a little more like, I don't like this agent, or I don't like this front office, and so I'm going to be a little tenser? Or do they generally just say, this is business, and we're going to approach it that way?
I think both. I mean, I think sometimes agents rub teams the wrong way. Teams rub agents the wrong way. That happens. I don't know if that, you know, maybe that happened on the Dak deal. I don't know. But that's a natural, that's the job of an agent, is to kind of extract the best deal, which goes against what the team wants. So inevitably, there's going to be disagreements between those two sides. It's almost set up for them not to agree. And that's just a byproduct of the way the system is. But I don't think that's unusual. Like, we could go through any big contract negotiation. You think the Bengals were really pleased with Rocky Arsenault, who represent? I don't think so. So, you know, that's just the way it kind of operates.
Do you anticipate, obviously, they're at a standstill right now. Do you think that you would anticipate, say, hey, just like other deals that the Cowboys have done in the past, Micah Parsons would probably, by week one, they'd say, let's just go ahead and wrap this up? Or is it just too unpredictable given where things are at right now?
No, I would say that eventually both sides will figure that deal out and get it done. That would be my guess. There's so much money involved, and you know, Dallas is going to want to keep him. He's going to want to stay. You know, I'm sure, like, when you're talking about $40+ million a year or whatever the number is, you know, why are you ever stepping foot on a football field until that deal is done? So to me, they'll figure out a way to get that done because the stakes are just too great not to.
Adam, Bobby is he's anti-tush-push. He wants that thing banned. I'm cool with it. I would like to see the Lions playoff seeding proposal pass through and the change. Is either likely to happen?
Yeah, well, I think the tush-push is on the way out. I think that when they table that, it's just a setup to get more votes to be able to overturn it and change the language on it so that, yeah, I don't think you'll see the tush-push. in the National Football League in 2025. That's my guess as we go into the May meeting in Minneapolis. The playoff seeding, it just seems like that's very extreme, and not to say it can't happen, that would surprise me more. Like I said, the tush push is on the way out. The playoff seeding, I think there's probably a lot more work there to be done before any decisions are made.
Before we get into this outreach that you're doing, trying to get people screened, I'm curious your thoughts on what the Cowboys are looking at as they head into the draft. They've got the 12th pick, a lot of uncertainty ahead of them. Where do you think they are targeting right now, whether it be just a position or if maybe there's a couple players that stand out?
Well, I think when you're the Dallas Cowboys, you've got to find a way to somehow come up with a cornerback, another cornerback, because there are some questions there. I think that they certainly could use another running back, as everybody knows, and it's a deep running back draft. So this is the right draft to need a running back. And I still think they'll add a wide receiver by the time draft weekend comes and goes. So those, to me, are three positions that stand out. They're far from the only ones. Certainly they could use another offensive lineman. Certainly they could use more defensive line. Like, you could use help everywhere, let's be honest. But if I'm looking at three positions that stand out to me, corner, running back, wide receiver.
Week one of next year, is Rodgers in the league?
I would think so, yeah. My guess would be that Aaron Rodgers is in the league, but you know, everybody's waiting on his answer, and we'll see what he ultimately decides. But right now, the only opportunity is in Pittsburgh. I'm sure he would have liked it if Minnesota had opened up. Maybe in time it still will. But right now, Pittsburgh is the one opportunity, and I would think that eventually the two sides will figure out a way to get that done.
April 15th, it's not just tax day, it's also T1D day, and I know this is something that's very important to you, early screening for type 1 diabetes. Talk to us a little bit about what you're doing today.
Yeah, my wife, Shari, is a type 1 diabetic, and obviously I see firsthand what it's like for her to manage this disease. And so what we would like people to do is talk to their doctor about type 1 diabetes and ask them about screening. You know, screening an unexpected type 1 diabetes diagnosis can have serious impact. So if you have more time to prepare, that can make a big difference. And that's why we believe screening for type 1 is so important. If you can do it early, it gives you valuable time to prepare. And yeah, I've been engaged by Sanofi to deliver the message, but it's really important when I get to watch my wife on a daily basis. Early information is currency. That's how I make my living. Getting information. And I want people to do the same thing when it comes to their health, so they can just go visit screen4type1.com to learn more. That's screen4type1.com to learn more. And I appreciate you guys asking about that ahead of April 15th.
Absolutely. Coming up here in just under a week, and the NFL draft coming up here shortly, where you will see Adam Schefter all over TV on ESPN covering it. Adam, thanks so much. We appreciate you.
Bobby, RJ, I appreciate having me today. Thank you very much.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan for this segment. And because he kept saying inappropriate things off air and we needed to try to rein him in, we bring in Bobby Belt for the conversation. Now, there's a couple of things here, but the how and why NFL teams continually miss on quarterbacks in the draft. Now, I think it's last week, maybe 2 weeks ago, Corey, we went through the study of first-round draft picks for quarterbacks in the last 15 years, and ooh, it is not encouraging.
Struggle bus.
And so I wanted to open it up to you guys to start, and then we'll dive into some of these things that I read in an article from CBS Sports about why quarterback is the position. Rodas has talked about how difficult that position is to scout. Do you guys have theories or a hypothesis about why it's so tough to scout this particular position?
I think, Bobby, this particular position requires so much more than just the physical act of being on the field and doing the job. Like, this requires a leadership, an ability to process information fast, an ability to learn beyond what you've already learned, in addition to the ability to throw and all the other physical attributes that come along with it. And I think sometimes scouts like to just go, he's 6'4". He's got all the, you know, physical things. We'll teach him this. And then it doesn't work out. Or they don't know enough about the person to know if they have the drive. Whenever they studied Dak, they were like, this dude's been through it and he's keeps coming out stronger on the other side, these other things might not matter as much as this part of, we know that he's going to be there fighting for everything.
Yeah, I think a large part of it is, because obviously the baseline is physically, what are you capable of?
Yep.
And so that's going to be the foundation for anything. And then you just start, when you're building from there, you have to understand certain things like character and specifically football character, which is not necessarily the same as character, but football character, leadership, mental processing, what kind of a student you are, how well you take to coaching, what kind of coaching did you have access to when you were at the college level versus what you'll receive at the NFL level, and having to make those sort of projections. And so I think in a lot of instances, some of these guys that we would talk about who are busts, you would say teams probably went into it eyes wide open and they knew this was a potential. They were just projecting out. So I don't even know that in a lot of instances they misevaluated a player. They knew who they were right then, and they just misevaluated what they were capable of tapping into. Like I think of Trey Lance. When Trey Lance got picked, San Francisco knew that dude is not ready to play football right now.
Yeah.
And they knew exactly the type of, they were just, they had to, what they had to fill in the gaps on was, what can he learn? How, you know, adept is he at picking those things up? How quickly can he take to it? And how much more can he tap into? And that's where a lot of the, you know, scouting side comes in, where you're doing a lot of research.
I think the other addition to this is, I think teams misevaluate themselves all the time. And they think, yeah, we're more prepared to take on this quarterback when they're not really. Their team's not built for it. When Trevor Lawrence was drafted, it made sense. He's the number one overall pick. It looks like he checks all the boxes off. But they didn't have a team. Mm-hmm. And they still don't have a team. They didn't have a good coaching staff. They didn't have a good environment for him to go into and be part of. And I think owners a lot of times are just like, just fix it. And guys are like, we don't have all the things to fix it yet. But man, as Broda says, if I tie myself to a quarterback, I'm there with him for the next 4 years probably.
Yeah.
And so a lot of these guys see it that way and they're like, all right, I'll figure out something there. But a lot of times they misevaluate what they are as a team and whether or not they can support said quarterback.
So there are two things in this article that I wanted to key in on that y'all have started to kind of touch on: incomplete experience and trait degradation. So incomplete experience, let's go back to the SEC. Tua had 71.4% completion percentage. So it was like, oh my gosh, unbelievable. Immediately gets smoked by Mac Jones. All right, so Mac Jones, 77% completion percentage, 41 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. But what the incomplete experience is, did all the teams look at the starting wide receivers and say, Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, Jalen Waddle, and Devontae Smith, there is no receiving core in the NFL that you're going to put together that has that much of an advantage on their defenders. And so he was throwing to 4 future first-round picks.
Right.
And do you factor that in and you're like, hey, do we need to like take points off of that, or like take a look at games where maybe some of those players aren't playing or they're not getting open or whatever the case might be?
That's interesting, because Joe Burrow is a perfect conversation on that because of who he was playing with in college.
And clearly it has worked out.
And he's turned out, yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
So, but he's also, I guess he's been lucky that he got to a place where he had T. Higgins and his best friend, Jamar Chase. Obviously, that came a year later, but he has those two receivers to run with.
Well, and like you said about 30 minutes ago, Corey, like, I mean, the quarterback is ultimately a large part of things and responsible for it. So you could say that Joe Burrow was a bust because they missed the playoffs this year. So I liked that point you made earlier about Dak.
Oh, my God.
No, but what I'll, here's the thing is that when you look at, like, I think the NFL did take that into account. Mac Jones went 15, which a quarterback going 15 is, you're that, if you're even sort of in the range, they're going to take you top 10. And Tua went 5, and Tua was the second quarterback taken off the board. So I think they do kind of factor those things in. I remember specifically somebody saying about Chase when he was coming out after Justin Jefferson's rookie year, where when you're talking about those kind of comparisons that maybe people make, I remember a scout saying, well, you saw what Justin Jefferson did this year, and you know, it was a year ago that everybody thought Jamar Chase was clearly the better player.
Right.
Yeah.
So like they did make that connection, just like, there's another piece of evidence if you need to see it of why Jamar Chase is going to be successful, because we know we felt like we knew for a fact he was better than Jefferson at college. and he just had a lot of success in the NFL. And so they'll make those connections occasionally. I think at the quarterback position, it can be, they definitely will factor in what kind of offense you play in. One of the reasons why Trubisky went ahead of Mahomes years ago was because there was just a question of Mahomes coming out of Texas Tech. Like, what was he capable of?
Yeah.
They didn't, it's not so much that they said he couldn't do it. They didn't know. And so for them, they go, yeah, the physical tools are there. We don't know what kind of a study he is. We don't know what he's capable of in terms of processing and different things like that. And it turned out he was great at it. But that was something you had to kind of just fill in the gaps on.
So yeah, do you like the person? Do you like the guy? Do you like the things that he can do? Those things help out. Then how long is it going to take him to learn how to take a snap under center? You know, or, you know, how to do things that he's never done in college?
I agree with that, but I go back to somebody like Marcus Mariota, who they fell into a trap of looking at college production versus what he was going to go up against in the pros. Like, because for him, and he's number two pick in that draft, is he was chomping people out on zone reads and outrunning everybody. And then when you saw his 4.52 speed, I would have thought that you would be able to do at least some calculations and be like, hey, that basic I'm going to run free is not going to work.
How much did game plan help his anticipation on when he could run?
Yes.
Chip Kelly's offense and the way that it was built, you saw that it worked very well for college players. I've said this for years. OU has a very good system for quarterbacks in college. Mm-hmm. Outside of college, they have a lot of stuff to learn. And that's one of the systems that I don't trust, because quarterback after quarterback has come out and not looked prepared. Now, granted, they all went to bad places too. A lot of them, like Sam Bradford, landed in a bad spot. Baker Mayfield, he had to deal with Cleveland. And so he had to grow up there.
He was Kyler, good at first.
Kyler landed in air. Well, actually, he was good the second year, I believe.
I just mean early.
But so like their offense is built to help the guy. So it makes the guy, he's a star in college, but he doesn't have the ability without that head coach that's in his ear or working with him on a weekly basis to say, here are the things that we're looking for and here are the things that we're not. A lot of it does feel like we're looking for these things. You should be smart enough to figure it out because you're a pro at this point.
I mean, that was literally the Goff conversation when he left L.A. was like, McVay's in your ear telling you everything to do. So how good a quarterback are you really? And then he goes to Detroit and he's shown he's a good quarterback. Yep. And he's capable of things. And so I think also the context matters too on when did you get picked. Like Shedeur Sanders could go in the top three.
Yep.
Cam Ward is probably going to go number one.
Yep.
There's a lot of teams that I think are heading into this draft saying that they don't think Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders are ever going to be like real big time franchise quarterbacks.
So do you think it's more of a disconnect of like, that's fine, that's what your scouting staff thinks, we think differently? Or do you think, I'm in this position, I need a quarterback, this guy is supposed to be the best of the bunch, so the hell with it?
Mostly that.
God, it's mostly, that it's so mostly just stupid.
It's mostly just an approach of, I think people go, I need a quarterback and I think this guy is good. I don't necessarily think he's great. I just got to take the lottery ticket, though, because the lottery ticket to me is that, like, if Abdul Carter hits, I don't totally care because I can take Abdul Carter and that's not going to mean anything. Cleveland's had Myles Garrett and they're still picking second.
Yeah.
And so I think to them, they just go, I'd rather take the chance on it. Great, that's nice that he's good, but if I don't have a quarterback, it means nothing, so I got to pick one. And I think that's how a lot of teams approach it generally. That's why Kenny Pickett got picked in the first round. A lot of people thought Kenny Pickett was a second round player.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And
a lot of people saw that.
And when you hear rumblings about Jalen Milroe, like why he accepted the thing to the invitation to the draft, I realize it could just be day two, but there are some people who think because he's in the mix as a day one pick, and I would be like, wow.
I mean, Kuiper mocked him very top of the second round today. So, I mean, he's right there on the edge.
The position itself is valuable for sure, and then he's got a lot of things. And day two is the day where anybody can move up. You know, anybody can make those changes because they slept on it overnight and they were like, all right, we did what we wanted in the first round. Day two, let's go get this thing that we really think we can have.
I don't think Milroe's going in the first round, but if Milroe went in the first round, I wouldn't be like, oh my gosh. Like, because now if he went top 10, like Michael Penix did a couple years ago, that's surprising.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's a lot of people who thought Penix was going to go in the second round last year. Then he goes eight. And so it's the approach, quarterbacks are going there. There's also a lot of people a few years ago when Pickett went in the first where they were like, Malik Willis will get taken in the first. And if he doesn't, he'll definitely go the second. And then he went like mid-third round. So it kind of depends how patient are teams willing to be to just say, well, I'll take the gamble because I want the lotto ticket.
Lottery tickets are fun, dude.
Yeah.
Scratch offs.
I agree, but I'm also one of the people who dabbles in the $1, $2, and $5 scratch off tickets
rather than $1 million ones.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm probably not buying the.
You're also a Duke fan. That's like playing the lotto. Like kinda, it's just as risky.
It's kind of like winning the lotto a lot of times.
But I'm not playing the $50 or $100 one. I wanted to throw in one more thing that went along with all of this. Is one of the suggestions is do a better job of isolating what that particular quarterback does on every single play. Like, don't look at the completion as much as, well, was the completion because that wide receiver was wide open? Did the quarterback create the time? Did the quarterback read the defense correctly? And if you isolate the things that that quarterback specifically did, that will at least, not that it's foolproof, but that will at least give you a better idea of what that player can do.
Now, look, last year did not go as well for C.J. Stroud, but after year one, C.J. Stroud was clearly ahead of Bryce Young. And everybody had said, Bryce Young's the pro-ready quarterback. C.J. Stroud's the one you might have to gamble on it, clicking into place. I remember a scout had told me at the end of year one, he was like, maybe we should have all paid a little bit more attention when he put up numbers against Georgia at the end of his career. Like, that should have made a like, that's an NFL defense, basically. They're putting all these players in the NFL. Maybe we should have paid more attention to that instead of the S2 test that he took. Mm-hmm. And does he process like that as quickly? And Bryce Young was considered, that's the floor. That's a guy who's going to come in and he can start today. That dude's pro ready. Everything's good to go. And then you can see just how much confidence can kill you. And so, I mean, there are some flawed aspects of it. I also think, again, teams understand what they're getting into and they're taking a risk. They're willing to take a risk. But they've also missed, everybody thought Trevor Lawrence was a slam dunk. And he's not been.
No.
If you watch Caleb Williams this year, it looked like Chicago said, you got the reins, just go make some plays. Like, it really did look like they were like very reliant on you. We gave you receivers, we gave you talented receivers, go throw to those guys. And the reality is that there are some things that he can and some things he can't do. And some things he can't do because your team's not ready for it. Maybe you don't have the offensive line for it or whatever. But that goes back to the thing you heard Tom Brady say with Belichick. He never asked me to do something I couldn't do. If you know a guy can't make a throw, don't put that play in there.
Agreed.
Don't ask him to do it. If you know it's going to fail and practice over and over and over, and then he can't do it, then don't put that play in. Ask him to do things he can. Grow him from there. Help him learn how to do that. Say you need to practice on this offseason. But for this season specifically, we know you can do these things. You're going to do those things, and we're going to try and win games that way.
Hey, Kevin.
Yeah?
Do you think Caleb Williams is like Samson, where if he doesn't have his bleep you nails, then he doesn't play as well?
Yeah, maybe, Bobby. For the purposes of ending this conversation, maybe.
Thank you, Lucius. We are now just 2 weeks till the NFL draft. It's time for Krusty's Corner. Former Cowboys scout, Super Bowl champ Brian Broaddus, brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement. Here's the king, Broaddus.
Thank you very much, General. Thank you very much to Reliant as well. Before I get started, too, Eric and I did a Love of the Star podcast for you this morning.
We sure did.
So
yeah, baby.
After our show today, if you feel so inclined to get on the treadmill or go out for your walk, put it on in your ears, check it out. I thought we did a pretty good job today.
You were on fire, dude. I mean, you are so locked in right now. We're 2 weeks out from the draft, and you are just getting buckets at a rapid rate.
I'm trying.
You're like Caitlin Clark versus the scrub volunteer dudes at Iowa. You're going 22 points in 2 minutes.
Some of those shots she knocked down were like good 30 feet
pulling
away
from half court, draining off balance, off dribble.
Crazy,
like, what is happening?
I was like, going, how about get a hand in her face? I guess not. I mean, she was knocking them down. And tomorrow, guys, we're going to do the wing challenge. Should we talk about that with the wings, with the honey barbecue, with the blue cheese?
Blue cheese.
Is that what we were talking about tomorrow?
That's right.
Wow.
Tis the season for Pluckers
wings.
Why not?
We'll do a bunch of different sauces and stuff, but I wanted to make sure that we'll at least. We wanted to see if the honey barbecue worked well with the blue cheese.
Right? Now, are you making these wings?
No. Here? I'm going to go buy these things. Okay. I'm going to go buy 100 of them or so, I guess. I don't know.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. We can eat a lot of wings, can't we? Dawson, we can eat these wings, right?
Oh, absolutely. You mean you're looking at the guy that can eat it. His name is Eric, right?
Oh,
there.
Oh, no. Hey,
Eric, guilty as charged.
Easy. Yeah, exactly.
37's my record, bone in.
We need 150.
Yeah. But how many did you eat that one time in 2 minutes? Was it 16?
Oh, it was... That's a good question. I think it was 15.
15?
15, yeah.
15 wings
And,
and we figured
but
out.
Remember, he got the rhythm late.
Yeah, he figured out they need to be warm.
They have to be fresh where they slide off the bone. Yeah, because the second time I tried, it was like cold, an hour after I had ordered it.
Cold,
and the cold, it sticks. Cold those wings stick to the bone.
Stick. So yeah, we're
not conducive for speed.
Yeah, I'm gonna order up a bunch of wings for us tomorrow and bring them in, and we'll do our taste test. But for Friday lunch. So excited about that.
Thank you.
And again, excited about next Thursday of our draft 101. And like I have encouraged you for, even if you're a fan of the Cowboys, not a fan of the Cowboys, please show up if you're interested in the draft. We'd love to have you here. And thank you to our guys, Travis, and those guys at Whataburger for providing all the food for us. They do a tremendous job. All right. I ran across this, some of the draft content. And this comes, as I've been kind of looking at Pro Football Focus, they've really kind of locked into some draft specific stuff, and I thought this was pretty interesting. Can you guys tell me what scheme you would think, and because like it wasn't part of it, what scheme would you say that Brian Schottenheimer lends himself to? Because and I ask you this question because I got an idea of Matt Eberflus. I got an idea of how Eberflus calls defense. But I don't know, and the way they kind of broke this thing down, they've got the Shanahan scheme, which is the notable play callers of Kyle, Kevin O'Connell, Mike McDaniel, Clint Kubiak. That's the Shanahan scheme. Successful outside zone run scheme. Explosive plays created via play action. Maximize yards after catch. That's Shanahan scheme. Not our guy, right? That's not our guy.
No, I don't feel like that, Schottenheimer.
Okay, not Schottenheimer. All right, let's go down to the next one. Modern spread RPO scheme.
Yeah.
Notable play callers. Andy Reid, Nick Sirianni, Kellen Moore, Shane Steichen.
Yeah, I think there could be some of that.
Might have some of that.
Efficient inside zone run scheme.
Sure. Oh, yeah. I mean, that was Clayton Adams with the Cardinals.
Okay.
Yeah.
High RPO rate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Creates mismatches versus man coverage.
Yeah. That's kind of what he was talking about that he wants to try and do.
Okay. We'll circle back on that one. I couldn't quite think about what, but let me give you the last one.
Well, play action. I think he's a big play action guy.
Yeah. Let me give you the last one then. Multiple run read option scheme.
More of that.
This is Todd Monken. This is Cliff Kingsbury. This is Greg Roman pre-Chargers.
Okay.
Do you still feel that he falls in the multiple run read option scheme is quarterback-centric offense that allows for dual threat quarterback.
No.
Multiple run schemes that include pullers,
that
misdirections,
is,
and options.
Yeah. I think the multiple run scheme, I agree, but not anymore. With I don't think Dak's a guy that's going to be doing a whole lot of running right now.
No, but it's just the threat that he could steal 5 yards from you, and I think he's credible enough. We're not trying to run him a lot. We're just running that action to get the look, and if they ignore him, then he'll take the free halfway to a first down, you know, but avoiding contact at all costs.
Sure.
Okay, and the last little category in that one is varied passing game depending on type of passer.
Yeah.
Okay, so do you feel like that Schottenheimer's the multiple run read option guy?
Yes.
Or do you feel like he's the modern spread RPO scheme guy?
I don't think it's the RPO stuff as much. I think there's elements to a lot of this stuff because I'm kind of looking at what the Cardinals were doing. It seems like Schottenheimer's broadening his own personal horizon. So whatever it was that Schottenheimer's done in the past isn't necessarily based on the coaching staff that he's brought in, what they're doing now, which I think is awesome because he's willing to evolve. So what was Drew Petzing and the Cardinals doing? I was waiting for his name to pop up there, how they categorize him, because I think there's going to be some elements to very versatile in the way they attack you in the run game in terms of inside zone, man, outside zone, counter, pull, lead, power. All those are going to be in the mix there on the menu.
That'd be multiple runs.
Yes.
Right?
And then you have the McVay factor of the cut splits and the blockers that, wide receivers that really get involved in the run game from a blocking standpoint.
Yeah. Reduce
multiple
formation.
Personnel grouping. Yeah. So I think there's elements to a lot of these guys based on what the Cardinals were doing, and that's where you got your OC Clayton Adams.
Okay, we'll circle back on that one tomorrow. But I want to, since on defense they've tagged Matt Eberflus. And Matt Eberflus falls under the zone-based 4-2-5 scheme.
Bend, don't break.
Yeah. Sure. Four down linemen, two linebackers, five defensive
backs. Funnel everything inside, keep it in front of us.
Yeah, these are the notable play callers that do this. Bob Sala has got this one. DeMeco Ryans, Matt Eberflus, and Shane Bowen are the zone-based 4-2-5 guys. Okay? What are the goals for the 4-2-5? Apply pressure with four-man rush, low blitz rate.
That's right.
Okay? High zone coverage rates, generally cover three or cover four.
Yeah.
Penetrate interior gaps in run defense. Okay? That's what they kind of say.
That's why OSAD had to come back.
Three tech. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so that's the 4-2-5 cats. Okay, here's the players in this draft that fit a 4-2-5 scheme, okay, according to Pro Football Focus. At edge, Shamar Stewart, Texas A&M. JT Tumalau, Ohio State.
Hell yeah.
Interior defensive tackle, Mason Graham, Michigan.
Yep.
Interior defensive lineman, Jamari Caldwell, Oregon. Linebacker, Demetrius Knight from South Carolina.
They met with him.
Linebacker, Jack Kaiser, Notre Dame.
Okay.
Outside cornerback, Barron, Jody Barron from Texas.
There you go. He's the best in the business.
Outside corner, Darian Porter from Iowa State.
Dude.
Slot corner, Jacob Parrish from Kansas State.
Let's go.
Safety, Andrew Makuba, Texas.
Let's go.
Safety, RJ Mickens from Clemson.
Local. South Lake's own.
Yeah.
Let's go, RJ.
Okay. So it's the. What they're talking about here is as they make this presentation is that they want to start with Mason Graham as a potentially dominant three technique at the NFL level, who is very highly graded by Pro Football Focus. There's some changes in this. They think of pass rush development with Stewart and Tua Malau. Yeah. I'm not sold on Stewart's pass rush.
Me either.
And Tua Malau, I don't think rushes the passer at all.
I wouldn't say at all. I think he's more of a power rusher than he's a speed rusher.
Right. But both these guys would be better. They play with more power than they do moves.
Agreed.
Right. So they don't free themselves as much.
Sure.
Okay. On the second level, Jack Kaiser. What do you think of Jack Kaiser from Notre Dame?
I mean, super instinctive player. I mean, the dude, he's a really good open field tackler. Special teams wise, he's going to be able to contribute right away.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he ended up making plays that athletically, I'm like, how in the world did he get there?
Yeah.
You know, because he's not the fastest guy in the world, but I think he really understands leverage and angles, and he's a good pursuit player because of that. He wraps up well, brings ball carriers down. But yeah, he does lack some like general athleticism, but I think that he's football fast. I don't think he didn't test great.
No.
But he's faster on tape than what he tested.
They really like Knight for his elite coverage is what they say. So they like Kaiser for the run defense, and they like Knight for the way that he covers.
Yeah, he's good in zone coverage
Sure. Very good.
I don't love him in man, but he's great in zone.
Okay, the zone coverage ability, the theme of the secondary, we have that in spades here with Barron and Porter ranked first and second among the cornerbacks when it comes to cover grade in 2024.
I'm pretty out on Porter.
Okay. If we combine coverage of across the snaps in cover three and cover four, Andrew Makuba and RJ Mickens both rank in the top three, the power four safeties. Parrish rounds out the group as a solid zone player himself who could play in the slot. You love Parrish. I love Parrish.
I love Parrish,
love Makuba, right?
Yeah, love Makuba.
Do you think you have to take Makuba? We would have to take Makuba.
Second round.
I think so, too.
I think Parrish could get there in the third.
But there's people, if you look at the beast, Dane Brugler thinks that Makuba's a fourth-round player.
He does. So, I mean, there could be some. Maybe Makuba could make it to you at three.
Man, I don't know about that. I just don't know how you watch Makuba's tape and not see him.
His safety rankings were very interesting.
Very interesting there. So those are the players that Pro Football Focus has as best fits for a 4-2-5 scheme. We all do really, really like. I like Porter more than you, the Iowa corner. I like his length. We all love Barron. We love Graham. The edges I'm not really sold on with this group.
I like JTT a lot.
I mean, as far as pass rushers.
Yeah. I get what you mean.
Okay.
So you're zeroing in more on scheme fit here as we approach 2 weeks to draft.
Yeah, how about that?
I love it.
How about that?
Do you think you can isolate it? Is it that important that in that group of players that fit that scheme, they have a significantly higher probability of being picked?
I would say it's an interesting way to do things. Yeah. I mean, like I say, if I could figure out what exactly that Schottenheimer wants to do offensively, and if it's the pin and pulls and the things like that, it's the movement, the line stuff.
I'll see what kind of players that
you
got.
Yeah, you could fit those guys. Absolutely, you could fit these guys. You could zero in on guys they would like just on potential scheme fits here.
I can't wait to watch this offense in Oxnard. That was a great primer for it. Yeah. Draft 2 weeks away. Our path to the draft coverage is brought to you by Pluckers. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Krusty's Corner brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning every afternoon, 3:40. Nosebleeds reply to Bobby Belt is now 23 minutes away. It's coming up at 4:20. Let's talk baseball. Some Rangers are struggling, but is this Ranger back to his World Series form at the plate? That's coming up next here in the G-Bag Nation. Thank you, Lucius. Welcome back, Nation. Krusty's Corner in just a second. Champions League action. Arsenal now leads Real Madrid 3-0, 86th minute there. Declan Rice with two 30-yard free kick goals. Unbelievable. Strikes as they're up 3-0. This is the quarterfinal leg 1 of 2 the Champions League. Bayern just equalized against Inter there in Germany. Here's Brian. Krusty's Corner brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement. How about that? A 16 seconds on soccer lead-in for you, buddy.
How about that, man? I appreciate it. Thank you very much for that. You think we need to do something?
I get the obituary for the lead-in for mine.
Today, 4 people froze to death. Yeah. Let's go to Lucius Alexander in the pimp car.
Yeah. How you feeling, Lucius? Come on down.
Rangers lose 7-0. Lucius, let's go to the pimp car.
Hell is frozen over.
Do you think we need to work on our wall placement?
Or, yes. Yeah. Down the outside wall in that first goal was a little chicken.
Did we turn
to the side and jumping in. I think he got behind the second guy.
Oh, really?
It's so tough.
We need to work on the placement of the wall, maybe the setting of the wall.
I mean, there was some pretty good English on it.
Or get some better.
Some more courageous wall pieces might have helped. But, man, he whipped that thing around. It was pretty incredible.
Yeah. All right. Good deal. Champions League. Do you? We try and watch it when we're here.
Yeah.
But we kind of look at the final. Isn't that kind of where we're at, though?
Oh, yeah.
That we always just kind of worry about the final. Right?
Yeah. Wake me up when we get to the final, I think, is typically the American approach to the Champions League. It's, you know, it's soccer's Super Bowl equivalent.
Yeah.
They haven't made it super easy to watch now with they've got on the streaming services.
Yeah.
So if we're here in the studio, unless it's like the final and they've got it on CBS 11.
Yeah.
Used to be when it was on FS1, you knew exactly where to get it.
That's a good
point. There needs to be some sort of a reckoning for sports fans. And, you know, I support everybody's ability to do what they want with their business, but their businesses are going to be in trouble. Like it's getting harder and harder to find these games.
Yeah.
You need people to watch your games in order to justify it. So I think they'll get it figured out before too long, especially after that Diamond Sports thing last year, where they were just like, we don't want to pay you guys anymore for these games, so we're done.
Can I ask one more soccer question, if
Absolutely.
You don't mind, here in the corner? When you're... I'll tell you one of the reasons why I do like watching soccer, I know exactly how long it's going to be on.
That is pretty cool, isn't it?
You just know, okay, there might be some stoppage time, you know, there might be, you know... But generally, you know exactly what your time commitment is.
We'll be in and out of here in 2 hours, yep. Max.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I kind of was just always like, okay, if I'm U.S. is playing tonight, all right, I know I need 2 hours to watch this thing.
Yeah.
You know, so, and soccer in general. So I do applaud for that. All right, well, Chuck, I do need your help.
Okay.
Dawson,
what do we
Chief,
got?
You guys can do what you need to do. Watch
Go
soccer.
Take a leak.
No, wow. Yeah. Watch all soccer. Right. Do what you have to do. No.
Rude.
I'm just kidding.
I'm going to get a Diet Coke.
Yeah, seriously. You got two of them right here. Absolutely. Go get you one. All right. Hey, Woolchuck.
Yeah.
Okay, we got these 30 visits. I think I got 16 names, right? I'm going to run down these names for you that what we have. And I know we've talked about it, but I want to get your approach on this. are the guys I'm going to give you, would you take at 12, or are these trade back guys?
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I want to get your, I want to go through them.
Boom.
And I want you to tell me, guy you would consider at 12,
we're backing out,
or we're trading back to get these guys. All right, you ready?
Yep.
How about Mimbu from Missouri?
I would take him at 12.
Okay. So that's a no question for you right there.
Yeah, I think there's a risk involved if you want to move back. I don't know that you're going to get him. And I don't know that he's even going to be there at 12. So if you were and you value him like that, I think that he's a player you just need to stay put and you need to go ahead and take him.
So you would go ahead and take him at 12?
Yes.
I like what you did there. I think you're absolutely right, even though he might be gone beforehand. How about Pierce from Tennessee, who we've just learned?
That would be a back. I'll go ahead and trade back for Pierce.
Edge from Tennessee.
And I don't know that he's going to go round one because of some of the off-the-field concerns with him. I also don't know if you can really line up and play with both him and Micah Parsons on the same defense. It is a very tantalizing thing to think of them rushing the passer together.
Mm-hmm.
It's also terrifying because I am going to line up and run right at both of them and say, prove you can stop me. And I don't think they can.
You just don't. You absolutely just don't.
He's 6'4", 245. He's an athletic freak. And he has a rare ability to get to the passer. The burst off the snap's explosive.
Yeah.
But he does get pushed around. And I worry about him being able to set the edge against the run.
Mykel Williams, the edge from Georgia.
For me personally.
Stay or trade back?
That would be a trade back.
Okay. And why?
I would stay in and take Mike Green. I just have other players that I like more than Williams. I think Williams is a good player. Physically, he's everything you want in an edge rusher. But right now, he is a better run defender than he is a pass rusher, which I'm cool with. This team struggled to stop the run. Mm-hmm. So I think that he is going to be a good player in the league. But can you develop some of the pass rushing traits with him? He does show the ability to win with some multiple rushes, the bull rush, the swim move. He's got some speed off the line. It's a little inconsistent. He flashed against Texas.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't see the pass rush ability consistently with him. But an outstanding player against the run, I would rather just try and get some more value, take him later on in the teens if I could.
We mentioned Hampton, the running back from North Carolina. Stand there and take him or trade back?
That's a trade back. It's a trade back for me. I think 12 is a little too high, a little too rich. I don't think I'd be considering any of the running backs besides Jentie there at number 12.
And he was a Dallas Day guy. I'm not including him in this list.
Sure.
He would be a guy you would stand in there and pick.
And
right?
I like Hampton. I kind of like Travion Henderson and Caleb Johnson a little more.
Okay. And you look at Junkins and Henderson, who they both brought in as guys you would consider at 44, right?
Yeah. Now, Henderson might sneak into the first round because of the speed there. Some
right.
teams might like, oh, is this Jahmyr Gibbs? You know, but yeah, I'd love Henderson at 44.
Chet McMillan, wide receiver.
I'd stay in and pick him.
Okay. How many of those guys would you have like that? I mean, just a no-brainer. Is he just a no-brainer?
He's a no-brainer for me. So I've got him as the fourth best player on my board.
So give me your top four then.
Top four for me, Travis Hunter, Abdul Carter, Ashton Jenty, Chet McMillan.
Wow, you got him in pretty high company there.
Yep.
Okay. How about Luther Burden, wide receiver, Missouri? Would you stand there and pick him at 12, or would he be a trade back for you, guy?
That'd be a trade back for me. I do love the explosiveness, and I mean, I question a little bit about his ability to win down the field, the contested catches. I think he can do it. He did it 2 years ago. Last year, it was probably more quarterback play, and I'm unfairly putting that on him. But I just like Igbuka and Golden a little bit more than Burden, so I'd move back to try and see if I can get some more assets.
Okay, how about Abuka, wide receiver from Ohio State? Stand there and take him at 12 or trade back?
I'd be fine staying and taking Abuka at 12 personally. I think he's a safe player. I think he's helping you in the running game because him and Aominor out of Stanford, I think, are the two best blocking wide receivers. He's a tremendous route runner. I think he's going to be a good pro. But you probably could get him later. I think you could go ahead and trade back and still be able to get him. I mean, a lot of mocks have him going in the 20s. Hell, today, Mel Kiper had him going in the second round.
Why is that?
I don't know. I mean, maybe he doesn't. I think he does have the explosiveness.
Yeah.
You've seen him take screens and go 60 yards to the house.
Sure.
But for whatever reason, he's not being talked about in the same mold as a Golden or a Burden. I think he's a disservice to the player.
Do you think he's one of the most underrated players yes. in this draft?
Yeah, I do. I think it's because he's, and it kind of goes with really his entire career at college.
Yeah, he he's disrespected because he's always been the number two.
He's
right?
always had to be second fiddle, but he's not even, he's a 1A. He's not even a two. Okay. I love Igbuka.
Banks, the offensive tackle guard from Texas. Would you stand there and pick him at 12 or is he a trade back?
I'd personally trade back.
Okay. Reason?
I've just got some questions on him. I wouldn't mind the pick at all. It's offensive line. And he was a starter for a while at Texas, was very, very productive. He moves exceptionally well. He's a good athlete for that size. I've got Simmons and Will Campbell ahead of him. And Membu, 20 years old. I think he's a right side player already. You don't have to worry about that.
Sure.
Like, what are you going to do with Kelvin Banks? Are you kicking him over to right guard? Are you moving Tyler Guyton? I think I'd rather just go ahead and see it. If he slides to me, I'd feel great about it.
How about Walter Nolan, defensive tackle from Mississippi?
That's a trade back. I don't think Walter Nolan for me. I've got a two on him, and I've got a lot of other defensive tackles ahead of him. I think the Cowboys probably are big fans, and I could be so wrong about him. You see what scouts would love and coaches would love with the explosiveness, the ability to rush the passer and get upfield, but it is just it's too inconsistent for me.
How about Revelle, the cornerback from East Carolina?
Had he not had the ACL, I'd stay at 12 and take him. I think he could be the best corner in the draft. But in this scenario, that would be a trade back. I think he's a target at 44, and he might be able to get there.
Do you feel like, though, that you worry about him with him coming off the knee the way it is and stuff like that?
I just don't know. And how long is it going to take
guy?
Him? Yeah, exactly.
Him or Barron if you had to.
Barron. I'd stay in at 12 and take Barron.
You would stay at 12 and take Barron. If in fact. Are you surprised they didn't visit Golden so far that we know about?
Yes, I am, considering they've met with all the other top receivers.
I kind of feel like, though, that Golden is still in the mix, even though if they don't visit him, by the way.
I mean, they were at the Texas Pro Day. Yeah. They probably got a little bit of info on him.
So you're pretty much, you're trade back in a lot of these scenarios. You're going to stay for Membau. You're going to stay for McMillan. You're going to stay for Igbuka. That's kind of where you're at right now in these 30 visits, right?
Yeah.
I don't disagree with you on some of
these.
Now,
you got to get a trade partner.
Yeah, so, no, absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
It might be wishful thinking.
But those are the guys you're willing, if they brought in, if they pick one of those guys at 12, you'd be absolutely elated.
I'd be pumped.
That. Yeah. I think you're onto something there.
Well, thank you, boys.
Joe, thank you.
All right. There it is.
It's a bang up job, gentlemen.
Thanks, man.
Brought to you by Reliant Air
Enjoy
Conditioning.
Your rest.
It was incredible, dude. I'm ready to throw heat now.
Gimmick-free AC repair and replacement. Okay, speaking of throwing heat, Chief, you up next here?
Yeah, Sports Hodgepodge. We begin prepping our bodies for Masters weekend. We have your viral sports clip of the day, plus a nefarious college sports prank goes awry next in the nation.